The coronavirus spreads uncontrolled in the United States. The country averages 145,000 new cases a day.
That's far higher than just a few weeks ago. How can Americans spend the holidays safely?
I'm Rachel Martin along with Steve Inskeep, and this is Up First from NPR News. Texas is the first state to have more than a million confirmed cases of the coronavirus. Hospitals are filling up, and so are the morgues.
This situation is unsustainable, and it's going to get worse if we continue to set new records every day in infections.
Why did the state sue to block safety measures?
Also, violence in Ethiopia crossed an international border. One side launched rockets into neighboring Eritrea. What does a rebellious region want from the government? Stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your day.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Acoustic. Acoustic is the marketing cloud that helps marketers get back to thinking bigger and connect with customers on a more human level. Whether it's moving, funny, or simply the truth, it's time to get that back. Learn more at acoustic.com.
Support also comes from Washington Wise Investor, an original podcast from Charles Schwab that explores how decisions made in Washington could impact your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/Washington Wise.
It's really hard to get your brain around how rapidly the coronavirus is now spreading.
Right. So what we can do is think about the numbers, right? A million new cases were confirmed in just 1 week, totaling 11 million confirmed cases across the country. On average, 1,000 people in the U.S. are dying every day from COVID-19. Hospitals around the country are overwhelmed, especially in states like Iowa, where Dr. Nick Moore treats COVID patients.
Yeah, the hospitals in eastern Iowa are full. That's something that has us really concerned as we see case counts continuing to rise.
Dr. Moore says people need to remain vigilant, wear a mask, wash your hands, practice social distancing, avoid crowds and gatherings, especially indoors, and bear in mind that however much of that people are doing now, it's apparently not enough yet. The caution includes big get-togethers for Thanksgiving.
I have family all throughout Iowa and all throughout the country that I would love to see too, but we aren't going to be seeing any family because right now it's just too risky. Doing the things that we can to prevent the spread of the virus is just the most important thing that we can do right now.
NPR's Allison Aubrey has been covering the coronavirus pandemic since day one, and she's with us now to talk about the surge. Hey there, Allison.
Good morning, Steve.
So how different when we hear about that many people being infected, how different are the numbers than just a few weeks ago?
Yeah, you know, new cases are increasing so quickly that just since the beginning of the month, there's been about an 80% increase, and we have not reached the peak yet. We're averaging 1,000 deaths a day, as you just said. That is 42 people every hour, Steve, and close to 70,000 people are hospitalized. I spoke to Mark Boom. He's a doctor who is the CEO of Houston Methodist. He says right now there are about 150 people being admitted to Texas Medical Center hospitals every day, and if current trends continue, it's just not sustainable.
So 2 weeks from now, that's 300, and then 2 weeks after that, that's 600, and 2 weeks after that, that's 1,200 if that trend continues. And that's what we cannot allow to happen. And things get so much worse so quickly, and we've got to be vigilant, and we've just got to persevere.
He says it's absolutely crucial that everyone take precautions to slow the spread.
Allison, when I look at a chart of infections, it's starting to look like we're climbing a mountain. It's even becoming a cliff. It's going up so steeply. Is there still a possibility to get this under control before absolute disaster?
You know, take what they've done in England. They've basically gone back into a nationwide lockdown. They've kept schools open, but restaurants, pubs, non-essential businesses have closed. Here in the U.S., we have a hodgepodge, Steve. Chicago has a stay-at-home advisory. There are new rules in Michigan, Washington, new ones being announced every day at a state level. North Dakota just issued a mask mandate. I spoke to one of President-elect Biden's coronavirus advisors, Lois Pace. She told me at their very first meeting last week, the focus was to lay the groundwork for a much more unified approach. And what we're likely to see is a set of evidence-based guidelines on when to issue restrictions and when to loosen them.
You know, these things are a dial, not a light switch. And so I think that will be a part of our discussion is really understanding better when and where to turn up that dial based on data.
You know, she says this will be crucial going forward.
So we have this crisis with Thanksgiving just 10 days away. What's the safest approach to the holidays?
You know, there's a new element to this pandemic fatigue, Steve. Most people get it that this is not the year for big parties or big family gatherings, but many people are expanding their bubbles ever so slightly, getting together with just one more friend, allowing, you know, one more kid for a play date. It's this very incremental expansion of our social bubbles combined with more time indoors that some experts say is leading to the spread of virus in the household. So the safest thing for the holiday is to just gather with your immediate household or your immediate social bubble.
Yeah, people in my family and circle are certainly changing their plans right now. Allison, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
NPR's Allison Aubrey. People say everything is bigger in Texas, and that now includes the pandemic.
It's the first state in the U.S. to have more than 1 million confirmed coronavirus cases. Among other places, El Paso is in crisis. Intensive care units across El Paso County were reaching capacity more than 2 weeks ago. Things have grown so much worse that the city has turned its convention center into a field hospital. Remember when things were that bad in New York in the spring? Well, cases across the U.S. are a lot worse now than they were then.
Mallory Falk of our member station KERA is in El Paso. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
As best you can tell, what makes Texas different from other states?
Well, Texas doesn't have tight coronavirus restrictions in place like in some other states. The governor issued a statewide executive order on COVID, and it doesn't allow individual communities to implement their own restrictions. Texas very much is a place that lets people do what they want to do. And I should also point out, Texas has a high rate of residents who are uninsured or live far away from hospitals and medical care. So there are many people here who have the type of untreated underlying conditions that mean they'll get sicker if they get COVID, and that's part of the problem too.
So Texas is taking a sort of freedom first approach to the pandemic, but what is being done to try to limit the spread?
Well, it is all mired in politics. Here in El Paso County, the judge, who's the top elected official, last month he ordered a temporary shutdown of non-essential businesses, but several restaurant owners and the state attorney general sued. And on Friday, a court sided with them and blocked the order, saying cities and counties can't impose tighter restrictions than what the governor allows. And I should mention geography, too. El Paso is right on the border with New Mexico, and the governor there just implemented a two-week statewide shutdown, something that hasn't been done here. And El Paso is right on the border with Juarez, Mexico, and that city has a nightly curfew. There are tighter restrictions in place than in El Paso. And so there's this delicate balance because people are moving across various borders with different rules and restrictions.
You know, I'm remembering that just a couple of weeks ago, we checked in on El Paso and found the hospitals filling up a couple weeks ago. And now Allison Aubrey is telling us that things are infinitely worse than just a couple of weeks ago. What's that mean for the hospitals?
Yeah, hospitals here are at capacity. There are 10 mobile morgues that are now needed because of so many people dying so quickly. And in fact, some inmates from the county jail are now being paid $2 an hour to help move the overflow of bodies at the medical examiner's office. Funeral homes are overwhelmed. I spoke to a funeral director who had to convert one of his chapels into a storage cooler. And nurses have been speaking out publicly, pleading with people to stay at home, to suspend family gatherings. And they've also been pleading with state officials to let El Paso leaders respond to the crisis and implement shutdown orders. Juan Anchondo is a nurse at Las Palmas Medical Center.
This situation is unsustainable, and it's going to get worse if we continue to set new records every day in infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. With our governor, our attorney general, and the court as accomplices to this tragedy.
Steve, the medical staff here also talks about the psychological toll. Nurses and others describe seeing their patients vibrant and lively one day, only to deteriorate rapidly and die not long after.
Mallory Falk of member station KERA in El Paso, Texas. Thanks for the update.
Thank you.
And let's turn our eyes overseas now to an emerging civil war in Africa.
One part of Ethiopia is fighting the central government. And over the weekend, the violence crossed an international border. The rebellious regional government shot rockets into the capital of neighboring Eritrea.
NPR's East Africa correspondent Eder Peralta is following the story from Nairobi, Kenya. Hey there, Eder.
Hey, Steve.
How did things escalate to this point while our attention in the United States was turned elsewhere?
I mean, so the central conflict here is between the new government of Ethiopia and the old government of Ethiopia. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed came into power in 2018, and he sidelined the TPLF, which had ruled Ethiopia for nearly 30 years. And they've been fighting about elections, about a legitimacy, but all of this came to a head when the TPLF attacked a military base just about 2 weeks ago. And that's when this war started. It's been really hard to get a sense of what's happening at the center of the conflict because the phone lines and the internet have been shut off. But over the weekend, I did manage to reach out to Daniel Berhan. He's a political analyst in Mekele, which is the capital of this rival regional government. And I reminded him that not long ago, he and I sat at a cafe there, and the overwhelming sentiment was that people in that region, that they were sick and tired of war. And I asked him, you know, what happened? And he said that people in Tigray had no choice because this is a battle about sovereignty or subjugation. Let's listen.
Do you think Tigray will continue to exist with our existing territory and with our existing self-determination, with our existing proud history and heritage? Do you think they'll let us be that? No, they won't. They'll certainly destroy Tigray.
If Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, he says, wins this war, Tigray disappears, and the government, for its part, believes that if the TPLF is allowed to remain, a united Ethiopia cannot exist. So it's hard to imagine any scenario where this conflict ends quickly because both of them are framing it as an existential struggle.
So why then did the violence cross an international border into another country?
So the TPLF says that it shot missiles into Asmara because they believe that the Eritrean government is colluding with the Ethiopian government to attack the TPLF. We don't know if that's true, but, you know, the attack makes this conflict international, and it's almost sure to draw in Eritrea. And one of the reasons that is serious is because the TPLF and Eritrea, they've been at war before in the late 90s when the TPLF was in power in Ethiopia, a border war between Ethiopia and Eritrea. It became one of the deadliest on the African continent, and it seems that we are in the same place now.
So you have people who know war in the quite recent past, and now they're in the middle of shooting again. How is that affecting civilians?
Sudan says that more than 24,000 Ethiopians have already crossed into their country seeking refuge. So, you know, I think it just tells you that Ethiopia is in a very precarious position right now, and civilians are very likely to bear the brunt of this conflict.
Doesn't sound like there's any sign of this thing abating anytime soon.
No, there's no sign of it. And in fact, there are also ethnic tensions that are bubbling up.
Ader, thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Before we let you go, there's one more voice we'd like you to hear.
Right. So our colleague and weekend host of All Things Considered, Michelle Martin, sat down with former President Barack Obama for what was a very wide-ranging interview. The former commander-in-chief talked about the implications of President Trump's refusal to accept the outcome of the election.
I don't think he'll be successful in denying reality. And you're starting to see a few Republican elected officials go ahead and say, look, Joe Biden has been elected and we need to move on in the transition. I'm distressed that you haven't seen more Republican leadership make this clear, because the amount of time that's being lost in this transition process has real world effects. Look, we're in the middle of a pandemic. We are in the middle of an economic crisis. We have serious national security issues.
You can hear parts of Michelle's interview with President Obama throughout the day on Morning Edition, Here and Now, and All Things Considered, as well as online at npr.org. And that's up first for this Monday, November 16th. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Rachel Martin. We appreciate that you listen to Up First, and we want you to know we've got another daily news podcast for you to try. It's called Consider This, and every day they dive deep on one issue at a time to help you make sense of the day.
A little more from the 44th president is on Consider This, the next episode. Hear Barack Obama talk about the election of Joe Biden and what comes next. New episodes drop at 5 o'clock Eastern Time.
C Since the 1980s, hip-hop and America's prisons have grown side by side.
And we're going to investigate this connection to see how it lifts us up and holds us down.
Hip-hop is talking about what we live, trying to live the American dream, failing at the American dream.
I'm Sydney Madden.
I'm Rodney Carmichael. Listen now to the Louder Than a Riot podcast from NPR Music,
where we trace the collision of rhyme and punishment in America.